Hey, this is Manny, and you're listening to the AirLab podcast. So for the next few months, I'll be up in Wyala, South Australia, and I'll be doing a bit of work in a somewhat newish tourism space. If you've been living under a rock, say hi to the bugs for me. Nah, I'm just playing. But seriously, if you've seen any nature documentaries or other bits of underwater content in the past few years, you've probably come across pieces about the giant Australian cuttlefish, otherwise known as Ascaro sepia napama, that's their scientific name, formerly sepia apama. Now for this episode, I'll be referring to them just as cuttlefish, even though I'm talking about this specific species. Alright, so what's the deal? Well, to sum it up, it's the largest aggregation of cuttlefish on the planet, and it happens every year from May to August where, I kid you not, hundreds of thousands of these alien-looking creatures rock up to get their freak on. Very sexy. So many questions to ask. What is a cuttlefish? Why do they look like an octopus on an acid trip? Why do they aggregate here? What purpose do they serve? What does cuttlefish sex look like? Well, let's get into it. So what exactly is a cuttlefish? To shed some light on this question, let's delve into the biology of these mesmerizing cephalopods. Cuttlefish are members of the class Cephalopoda, closely related to squids and octopuses. With their distinctive flattened bodies, tentacles, and large W-shaped pupils, they're often hailed as the chameleons of the sea due to their remarkable camouflage abilities. Now, cuttlefish possess highly developed brains and sophisticated nervous systems, allowing them to exhibit complex behaviors and adapt to various environments. Now, how and why do they change color? Well, this incredible skill is not just for show, it serves a multitude of purposes, from camouflage and communication to predation and mating. But how exactly do they achieve these rapid and dynamic color changes? Well, the secret to the cuttlefish's color-changing ability lies in its skin, which contains specialized cells called chromatophores, iridophores, and leucophores. Each type of cell plays a unique role in this process. So first up, chromatophores. Chromatophores are cells that contain sacs of pigment in colors such as yellow, red, brown, and black. Each chromatophore is surrounded by muscles that can expand or contract, spreading the pigment out to be more visible or pulling it into a small dot to hide it. This allows the cuttlefish to display different colors very rapidly. Now they also have iridophores, and these are reflective cells that create iridescent colors by reflecting light. They can produce blues, greens, and other shimmering hues through structural coloration. Iridophores are layered beneath the chromatophores, adding depth and complexity to the color changes. They also have leucophores, and these cells reflect ambient light, helping the cuttlefish match the brightness and color of their surroundings. They act as a base layer that enhances the effectiveness of the chromatophores and iridophores. The combination of these cells is what allows the cuttlefish to produce a wide range of colors and patterns almost instantaneously. The process is controlled by the nervous system, which sends signals to the muscles around the chromatophores and adjusts the reflective properties of the iridophores and the leucophores. So beyond color, cuttlefish can also change the texture of their skin to blend in with the environment. And how do they accomplish this? Well, the texture change is facilitated by small structures in their skin called papillae, and here's how they work. Papillae are small, muscular, hydrostatic structures that the cuttlefish can extend or retract. When extended, they create bumps, ridges, and other textures on the skin surface. These structures are under precise muscular control, allowing the cuttlefish to create a variety of textures. Just like color change, the cuttlefish's nervous system plays a critical role. The brain sends signals to the muscles controlling the papillae, dictating whether they should extend or retract based on their surroundings. This ability to alter texture works in tandem with the color changing, enabling the cuttlefish to mimic the appearance of rocks, kelp, algae, sand, or other substrates. For instance, when trying to blend into a rocky environment, a cuttlefish might change its color to match the rocks and raise its papillae to mimic the rough texture. This dual ability to change both color and texture makes the cuttlefish one of the most adaptable and elusive creatures in the ocean. The seamless integration of color and texture changes allows the cuttlefish to evade predators, ambush prey, and communicate with each other. Their sophisticated control over these abilities highlights their complex nervous systems and advanced evolutionary adaptations. It's really fascinating how these creatures can manipulate their appearance so effectively. The combination of chromatophores, iridophores, leucophores, and papillae showcases an extraordinary example of natural engineering. Now that we've explored the fascinating abilities of the cuttlefish, let's dive into one of the most intriguing phenomena associated with these creatures, which is their annual aggregation in Wyala. Why do cuttlefish gather in such vast numbers in this particular location? Well, the annual aggregation of giant cuttlefish here in Wyala is primarily driven by their reproductive cycle. Here's a detailed look at why this happens. The waters of Wyala provide perfect conditions for cuttlefish breeding. The area features shallow, rocky reefs and seagrass beds that offer excellent habitat for laying eggs. The physical structure of the environment is crucial for the protection of the eggs from predators and strong currents. The females will actually attach their eggs to the underside of the rock ledges, ensuring their protection. The water itself is rich in nutrients, supporting a high abundance of prey. This abundance ensures that cuttlefish have enough food resources during the energy-intensive breeding season, allowing them to sustain themselves and focus on reproduction. We'll get more into what they eat in just a bit. Now, the timing of the aggregation coincides with the Australian winter from May to August, when water temperatures are optimal for cuttlefish spawning. The cooler temperatures during this period are favorable for the development of cuttlefish eggs, leading to higher survival rates. Generally, once the water drops below 17 degrees is when they start to rock up, and the masses will be around when the water is around 12 degrees, pretty chilly. Now, the aggregation creates a dense population of cuttlefish, increasing the chances of finding a mate. Estimates suggest that the numbers can range from around 100,000 to even as high as 200,000 cuttlefish during peak times. Males will display vibrant colors and intricate color patterns to attract females. So yeah, cuttlefish riz. They also display these patterns to compete with other males. Imagine some gym bros flexing on each other to try to assert dominance over one another. It's basically the same thing. The high concentration of individuals facilitates mating encounters and maximizes reproductive success. This aggregation also has broader ecological implications. The mass spawning event does not only ensure the continuation of the cuttlefish population, but also plays a significant role in the local marine ecosystem. The eggs and hatchlings provide a crucial food source for various marine species, contributing to the overall health and balance of the ecosystem. The combination of these factors makes Waialua a prime location for cuttlefish to gather and reproduce. The sheer scale of this aggregation is a testament to the importance of the conditions for their life cycle. Now, the question that everyone's been waiting for. How do these horny cephalopods get it on? Okay. The mating behavior of cuttlefish is a complex and fascinating process involving intricate rituals and strategic maneuvers. Here's a detailed look at how it all unfolds. So during the mating season, male cuttlefish engage in elaborate courtship displays to attract females. These displays include vivid color changes, patterns, and movements. Males will often display bright, contrasting colors and use their arms to create dynamic, eye-catching patterns. Male cuttlefish can be super competitive when it comes to securing a mate. They may engage in dramatic displays of strength and agility, including physical confrontations with rival males. These competitions help females choose the most fit and dominant males. Interestingly, not all male cuttlefish compete head-on. Some employ a sneaky strategy to mate with females. These quote-unquote sneaker males mimic the appearance of females, disguising themselves to slip past dominant males and get closer to potential mates without detection. Once a male successfully attracts a female, he uses his specialized arm called a hectocotylus to transfer spermatophores, which are packets of sperm, to the female. The hectocotylus is inserted into the female's mantle cavity, wild, where the spermatophores are deposited. Have you ever seen the movie Avatar, the James Cameron film with the blue aliens on Pandora? Yeah, so when the Na'vi use their braids to connect to other living things, it's a bit, yeah, like that. After mating, the female stores the spermatophores until she's ready to fertilize the eggs. Totally up to her. She will then lay the eggs in secure locations, such as under rocks or within crevices in the reef. The eggs are attached to these surfaces in clusters and are left to develop and hatch on their own. The mating rituals of cuttlefish are not only intricate, but also highly strategic, with both direct competition and sneaky tactics at play. These behaviors highlight the complexity of cuttlefish interactions and their advanced cognitive abilities. The use of camouflage, both for mating displays and for sneaker males, showcases their remarkable adaptability and intelligence. The cuttlefish's reproductive strategies are a testament to the evolutionary pressures and adaptations that shape marine life. Their behaviors provide valuable insights into sexual selection, adaptation, and the ecological role of cephalopods. Understanding these mating behaviors is crucial for conservation efforts, especially in regions like Waialua, where environmental changes could impact their breeding grounds. We've learned so much about cuttlefish, from their remarkable abilities to their intricate mating rituals. But what environmental changes could potentially impact their breeding grounds, particularly in areas like Waialua? Well, let's talk about it. So cuttlefish breeding grounds, such as those in Waialua, are sensitive to various environmental changes. Here's some key factors that could impact these vital habitats. Rising sea temperatures due to climate change can alter the marine environment significantly. cuttlefish are sensitive to temperature changes, and warmer waters could disrupt their breeding cycles and the development of their eggs. Optimal breeding temperatures are crucial for the survival of eggs and hatchlings. Another one is ocean acidification, and it's a big one, okay? Increased levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere lead to higher concentrations of CO2 in the ocean, causing acidification. This can affect the availability of calcium carbonate, which is essential for the development of cuttlefish eggs. Acidification can weaken the shells and make eggs more susceptible to predation and environmental stressors. Physical destruction of the habitat is another factor. Coastal development, pollution, and industrial activities can lead to the destruction of rocky reefs and seagrass beds, which are critical habitats for cuttlefish breeding. Physical alterations of the coastline and underwater environments can reduce the availability of suitable spawning sites. The main factor that's impacted cuttlefish within my lifetime has been due to fishing. Overfishing of cuttlefish and their prey can severely impact their populations. According to an excerpt from the Wyla Diving Services website, and I quote, "In 1997 and 1998, a market opened up for cuttlefish, mainly from Portugal and Hong Kong, and within the next 2 years, the animals were threatened with extinction in the Upper Spencer Gulf. Only the efforts of the local community, and in particular, the Wyla diving community, supported by local, state, and federal governments, successfully implemented a fishing protection zone. Unbelievably, in 2020, that protection was removed." End quote. Just last year, in May of 2023, did a fishing ban go into effect, protecting cuttlefish in the Upper Spencer Gulf from Arno Bay to Wallaroo North. We'll put a link to the map of the exclusion zone in the show notes. As much as this is a big win for cuttlefish, there's still quite a bit of work that needs to go into protecting these species, as they often become bycatch in fisheries targeting other species. Now, I've got so many questions. Why is this just happening? How come we're just getting protections put in place now? Why were the protections removed in 2020? Why has the government been so slow to act? And excuse my language, but what the f*** has the government been smoking? Well, the SA government seems to have a hard-on for fishing and doesn't want to prevent people from exploiting the ocean. Daily take limits are mismanaged for a variety of species, and fishing licenses aren't even required in the state. Did you know that PERSO, which is the Department of Primary Industries and Regions, according to their website, they say that they manage the fishing activities of an estimated 357,000 recreational fishers as of their 2021-2022 survey. How do they do that? How do they manage nearly one out of every four South Australians removing fish from the ocean? The short answer is they don't. Sure, they have programs like Fish Watch in place to try to get people to snitch on each other, but with that many people, it's impossible to manage recreational fishers. If the recreational fishing industry was as regulated as the commercial fishing industry, we'd have more funding, research, and protections for marine species in South Australia. If PERSA managed fish stocks and marine environments properly, organizations like the Air Lab wouldn't have to exist. All right, that's my rant. Back to cuttlefish, please. It's clear that a comprehensive strategy is needed to address these environmental challenges and ensure the survival of cuttlefish populations. Efforts to reduce pollution, manage fisheries sustainably, researching the impacts of tourism, and protecting more habitats are essential steps. By taking proactive measures, we can help preserve the delicate balance of marine ecosystems and support the continued existence of these fascinating creatures. Collaborative efforts between governments, scientists, conservation organizations, and local communities are key to achieving these goals. This event is one of nature's most spectacular events, attracting not only cuttlefish, but also researchers, divers, and wildlife enthusiasts from around the world. It offers a unique opportunity to study these remarkable creatures up close and to understand their behaviors and ecological roles. Now, if you have the opportunity, I highly encourage you to pay the giant Australian cuttlefish a visit. There's a few operators here in Wyla that can take you to see these magnificent creatures, including Wyla Diving Services, Cuddy's Glass Bottom Boat Tours for those who don't want to get wet, as well as the Air Lab. I'll be running educational dives around Wyla, so if you want to come out for a look with me, feel free to hit me up. You can find us at Air Lab on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and you can sign up to be an Air Lab member at airlab.org. That's EYRELAB.ORG. On the site, you can find educational resources about the projects we're running, some of the rad stuff we get to see and do, and find links to our marine species catalog that we've been developing over the past few years. If you think you know somebody who would like this podcast, please share it with a friend, family member, or anyone you think would be interested. Also, rating the show on your listening platform really helps us out. I'll be back, hopefully, in the next week or two with a bit more information about some of the stuff that we've got going on. But for now, take care. Cheers.